Excuse me, I'd like to inform all parties that the recordings have now begun. If you have
Thank
any
you.
Objections, you may disconnect at this time.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IGO-INGO Protections Policy Development Process Working Group call on Wednesday, 5 of December. On the call today, we have Wilson Abigaba, Donna Austin, Lanry Ayaji, Ilya Bazilnyakov, Brett Fossett, Elizabeth Finberg, Chuck Gomes, Alan Greenberg, Stephen Hankins, David Hisley, David Mayer, Kewan Malincharaville, Osvaldo Novoa, David Opebeck, Christopher Rassi, Thomas Rickett, Sintra Suknanen, and Liz Williams. We also have Claudia McMaster-Tamarit and Mason Cole. We have apologies from Paul Diaz and Ricardo Gillum. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Brian Peck, Margie Millam, and myself, Julia Chauvelin. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much, Julia. This is Thomas Rickert speaking, and I'd like to welcome you all to this working group call. Before we dive into it, I would like to ask you whether there are any updates to the statements of interest.
Thomas, this is Evan Leibovich. I don't have a new statement of interest, but I did join the call after the list of participants was read.
Great. Welcome, Evan. Hearing none, I take there are no updates to statements of interest, which allows us to move to the third item on the agenda, and that is the status of the general counsel request. And I think that this is a subject that Brian will give us an update on.
Over sure. Thank you, Thomas. This is Brian Peck from staff. Just to let you know, we did check with the general counsel's office. They are working on the response.
Excuse me, Brian. You have a
question? Sure.
We can hardly hear you.
Okay. There it is. Okay. Sure. Brian Peck from ICANN staff. We did check with the general counsel's office earlier. They are working on the response to the question posed to them. They have asked for a little bit more time given the complexity of the issue. They will endeavor to have a response by next Wednesday, the 12th, and if not, certainly by the 19th.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we leave it at that for that, for this agenda item. You might remember that during last week's call, we had a quite vivid discussion, fundamental discussion on whether protection should be granted or not. And in the course of this discussion, the question came up whether we would duplicate work and what the reasons for the reserved names working group were to protect certain names while others were not put on the reserved names list. And this is the reason why we have chosen to invite Chuck Gomes, who was the chair of the reserved names working group at the time, to give us a 10-minute overview of the work the group has done. And maybe this will help us define a little bit more clearly how they have approached an issue that is at least partially congruent to the issue that we're facing today. Chuck, over to you, and thank you for your willingness to contribute to this.
Thanks, Thomas, and good morning, good afternoon, good day to everybody. First of all, let me tell you that the Reserve Names Working Group was a part of the new GTLD PDP and fed into that, and its recommendations were incorporated into the ultimate recommendations that were approved by a supermajority of the GNSO Council. Also, I need to let you know that that work occurred and that working group happened back to 2006. So I'm gonna go mainly on memory. So if somebody was on that working group, please, and I know Aubrey was, but I don't know if she's on the call or not. Please feel free to correct me if I misstate anything. Ultimately, the working group was fairly conservative, I think, in their recommendations. We felt like we did look at governments, reserving names for governments and so forth. As many of you know, that's been changed. So our recommendations were not followed when it came down to implementation on that, and there's a variety of changes that were made for with regard to reserving names of governments. We did come to the conclusion that we should use the rights protection mechanisms that were built into the recommendations to deal with names that where rights might be violated. That was a general principle that came out. To my recollection, we never specifically considered, nor was it brought up, I don't believe, the IOC or the Red Cross, but IGOs did come up in our discussions. And again, the results of the working group, and later affirmed by the full council in the ultimate recommendation sent to the board, was to not add a lot of reserve names. Now, there was the country two-digit country code top-level domains that were reserved, but other than that, it was an approach basically to rely on the rights protection mechanisms to deal with issues of abuse.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. Are there any questions for Chuck? Liz, I have seen you mentioning in the chat that you're there to help. Is there anything that you would like to add?
Yep, thanks very much. It's Liz Williams speaking. I was the ICANN staff member at the time between 2005 and 2008 who ran all of the new TLD policy development processes for not only the overall policy but also the protecting the rights of others, which is the intellectual property discussions and the reserve names group. And one of the reasons why I've been so vociferous in my criticism of reopening these policy issues is that many of us over many months spent many hours arriving at policy recommendations that closed off the discussion. And this is no different. Again, this reopening of the discussion is no different from my vociferous criticism of the Protecting the Rights of Others groups, which seeks to expand the rights protection mechanisms for trademark owners. So nothing that I am saying is inconsistent with what I've been saying for many years. And I would urge the group to think seriously about what it is that they're doing, because I believe that this group is in grave danger of having an end run done around them with the board coming in over the top and making decisions that are not at all consensus-based. And I urge you all to reconsider the discussion from last week, which was the consideration of whether, at a level of principle, these particular organizations and anyone else require special protections at the top and second level at all. And I, at a philosophical level, am very consistent about that. And in terms of the operational work that was done within ICANN and then within a number of different working groups, I would urge you all to be extremely cautious about which way you're going to go with this.
Thank you, Liz. I have Evan next.
Thanks. Chuck, I have a question for you. As somebody who didn't join the ICANN volunteer cabal until after that was your work there was done, right now I see names protections taking a whole bunch of different paths within ICANN. We got the trademark folk going their way with the ORS and the UDRP. We've got the MAPO stuff that has turned into the objection processes based on government complaints, and we have this. Was there once an intention to try and have a single regime that would take a higher level view of all needs to reserve names? Is there a reason why these paths had to take such diversionary tracks, one for trademark owners, one for nonprofits, and one for what we generally would charitably call MAPO?
Thanks, Evan. I think a very pragmatic way to answer the question, why did it take off in so many different directions, is because a lot of organizations and a lot of groups didn't get what they wanted. That's fairly blunt. Okay, now, I don't know if that answers your question enough, but I think that's the honest answer.
It actually goes to my wondering why tools such as the URS, which is right now being a primary component of protecting trademarks, is not seemingly applicable to the work we're doing here, or could it? That's what I'm trying to figure out, whether or not mechanisms that worked elsewhere are immediately inappropriate in other places.
I'm not sure what you're asking me in that regard.
Well, just that the trademark path came with the UDRP and the URS, and we're trying to come up with something else. So in the possibility of saying, well, maybe mechanisms that worked in other streams might be workable here. Could the URS be extended, for instance, to work with IGOs? That's why I'm trying to figure out what the rationale was for the split in the first place, and that's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. It's not that we specifically came up with a rationale for leaving these various groups out. We decided that the best way to deal with rights issues was through the rights protection mechanisms that were built into the new GTLD recommendations. Now, coming back to, first of all, Liz, I agree totally with you that we have to be very careful about reopening processes that have taken a lot of time and come up with conclusions. But I will qualify that with this. As everyone knows, we're talking about a hugely long process from the end of 2005 to now. And so in that sense, I have to confess that, it is quite, first of all, we didn't we can't claim that we came up with the perfect solution, so it's not surprising that people would disagree with that. But secondly, because the process has taken such a long period of time, and at that time most of us a year ago were guessing what the implications would be in terms of the number of applications and so forth, and of course now we have a lot more information on that, and that adds some clarity to where we're going. So I totally agree with Liz that we have to be very careful about changing things that changing recommendations that a process resulted in. Now, back then we had the same problem we have now. It's very difficult to get governments involved, and a lot of you weren't involved in that time as well. So it's not surprising that new information has come forward. Now, what we do with that is what this group is all about with regard to the issues we're dealing with. But I think Liz is right. We need to keep that in mind and not just be too quick to change policy recommendations. But at the same time, I think it makes sense for us to look openly at the concerns that have been raised and try to work together to come up with some recommendations that the community today can support.
Thanks, Chuck. I have Ellen, David, and then Margie.
Thank you very much. A couple of things. We keep on talking about existing rights protections, and I think it's important to remember that most of the existing ones are remedial, that is, they fix a problem when they happen. And what people are asking for, both in these requests and in the current blocking request from the IPBC people, are preventative. So we're looking at perhaps two different complete mechanisms and trying to decide whether that is needed. But on the point that Evan raised, first of all, my understanding is, if I remember correctly, URS does apply to these organizations, certainly to ones governed by treaty. The UDRP does not, and for those who weren't around at the time or haven't read the thousands of pages of documentation, there was an effort in the same time frame as Chuck is talking about to put in place something equivalent to the UDRP or perhaps change it so it applied to IGOs. A significant amount of work, including drafting a policy, was done, but eventually it was put aside on the theory that the new GTLD process would address it, which clearly it hasn't. So there's all sorts of little bits of history around that we need to remember as we go forward. Thank you.
And Thomas, if I can just respond real quickly to Alan, the Reserve Names Working Group did consider the possibility of preventative type measures like changing the reserve name names list and elected to go a different direction.
Mm-hmm. David, please.
I just wanted to say that shortly before this meeting, I suggested in a correspondence to the group that one of the possibilities for this group is to consider amendments or improvements to all of the rights protection mechanisms to make it clearer that their protections are available to IGOs.
Thank you, David. For those who intend to make interventions at this stage, let me remind you that the purpose of Chuck's slot is to remind us of the history and what happened at that time. So let's leave discussing the question of what we're doing now for a later stage in our call. Margie, please.
Yes, this is Margie. I also wanted to clarify from a historical perspective that a lot of this has also been triggered by the GACS intervention, and part of the process, you know, it certainly involves the GENITO Council coming up with policy, but there is a point when the GAC is able to provide its viewpoint, and that also is, you know, part of the history and why this issue is coming up now. So I just wanted to clarify that.
And Chuck, again, I want to compliment that just briefly, Margie. And the GAC did provide some input to the Reserve Names Working Group. The group at that time elected not to reserve government names like the GAC recommended. So it wasn't as if there was no GAC input then, but a decision was made in the group at that time and later confirmed by the council to not go that route.
Okay, any more questions for Chuck? Okay, I have one. Chuck, you mentioned that at least the IGO topic was discussed at the time, but that the group chose to leave that to the RPMs within the framework of the new GTLD program. Now we see that not all of the upcoming RPMs are open to IGO's names. Would you qualify this retrospectively as an implementation glitch?
Not necessarily. It could have been a glitch on our part as well. I mean, maybe we should have looked at that further. Maybe we should have. I mean, we obviously didn't know anything about the new RPMs that have been added, right, at that time, but during the implementation phase. But we did know about the UDRP, and maybe it would have been good for us to look at the fact that intergovernmental organizations were not included in that. You know, we didn't, obviously, so maybe that was a glitch on our part.
Well, this was certainly not to blame any party, but I'm trying to find out whether the group at the time had foreseen protections that just through implementation did not come true. I have Jeff now.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on that because so I was around back then as well, and I compliment Chuck on his memory. There was the lack of inclusion of the IGOs was actually a purposeful decision at that point with respect to the UDRP. It had only been a couple years since WIPO had started what they called the WIPO 2 process, which was for the protection of IGO names and INNs, I think they were called, the pharmaceutical names. I may have that abbreviation wrong. But there was a process, I want to say 2002 through 2004, where WIPO had a round of consultations in order to include IGOs and pharmaceutical names in the UDRP. The ICANN board had specifically addressed this issue and voted it down. It was led by a committee that was put together by the board. I think Jonathan Cohen had led that initiative back in the early 2000s of getting all the input in. In fact, at that time, a number of governments actually opposed the inclusion of IGOs in the UDRP because at the time it was seen as adding additional protections that were above and beyond what the law granted in a number of the countries. So, for example, in the United States, there's no the protections for IGOs are not as great as are in other countries.
Can you please put your microphones on mute if you're not speaking? Thank you.
So I'm not saying things haven't changed, and I'm sure people like, I know David's on here from WIPO, but at the time, it was definitely a conscious decision by the people that were in the reserve names working group and others not to include the IGOs in the UDRP or even to recommend it because of the process that had just ended a couple years prior. Now, again, that's just historical. I'm not saying that needs to be binding now and going forward, but I don't see it as a glitch back then. I see that it was done purposefully.
Okay. I think what I'm – and sorry for keeping on asking, but there have been allegations that the work that this group is conducting might contravene former policy work of this reserve names working group, and I'm trying to find out whether this is true or not. In other words, whether the group at the time had foreseen certain protections to be in place or whether it was an intentional decision not to grant any protections, either by not putting certain designations on the reserve names list or foreseeing that those protections would stem from other RPMs. Chuck.
And in response to your question, Thomas, Jeff said it correctly. I mean, whereas we didn't specifically look at Red Cross and IOC, in looking at IGOs and even government names, okay, it was a conscious decision on the part of the group with the consensus on the part of the group. I can't say that it was full consensus, but consensus, strong support on the part of the Reserve Names Working Group to not add names like that to the Reserve Names work list. So to change that now, yes, it would be a contravention of policy that was approved. I'm not saying that because I think that we necessarily should not do that, but I think the answer is yes, it would be going a different direction than what was recommended.
Well, we would, you know, in order for that to contravene, we would need to use the reserve names list as a tool. You know, there might be other solutions to it, but that's very helpful because I think that's one of the major concerns that have been voiced. I have Ellen, and then I would like to move to the next topic.
Just one quick comment. Use the term contravene, and I don't think that's the appropriate term. That this is a policy process, and it may well result in a different policy process than the previous one did, and things change over time. But contravene sort of says we're doing something which is illegal, and I think we're going through due process right now on potentially changing something. So that there's a subtle difference between the two, or maybe not subtle. Thank you.
Thanks for the clarification. Brian, may I now invite you to give us some information on the final issue report on the IGO-INGO.
Sure. Thank you, Thomas. And my apologies up front for those of you who are already familiar with the report, but given the number of new people who have joined this working group, I'd like to briefly summarize the objectives and the recommendations of the report, as well as I think I'll spend most of the time during this brief presentation on the issues that the issue report identified as issues as suggested to be considered by this working group. The final issue report, both the recommendations and the key aspects, were both adopted and reflected by, well, adopted by the GNSO Council in initiating this PDP. That the PDP was initiated. We have representatives from the IGOs, the Red Cross, Red Crescent Movement, and the IOC Movement participating in our working group. We did recommend, and the GNSO Council did adopt or approve, that the PDP scope would consider expanding any new GTLD protections for these organizations to existing GTLDs as well. And of course, in our working group charter, we are trying to, facilitate an expedited work plan, in order to meet the timelines that we're all aware of in terms of the designation of the first round of new GTLDs next year. In terms of the objectives and issues to be taken up by the working group, again, these are reflected in the working group charter that was adopted by this group. The objective, of course, is to define the type of organizations that qualify for any top and second-level protections, and, of course, just mentioned structuring the PDP in such a way to effectively determine any recommendations in a timely fashion, given the designation of the new GTLDs, and, of course, now mechanisms to accommodate any protections that would extend to all GTLDs. Excuse me. In terms of the issues to explore, again, most of these, I think, are reflected in the working group charter, but just to kind of briefly give a little background, these are all identified in more detail in the report itself. The definition of international organizations. What is the scope of international organizations that should be or that could be qualified or eligible for any protection recommendations that come out of the work of this group? Quantifying the entities. The report notes that, for example, just, you know, in some brief research, the number of IGOs may exceed over 5,000. The number of nonprofit INGOs may exceed over 35,000. So obviously these are huge numbers. And so, you know, not only defining the scope of the organizations that could qualify for any possible protections, the need to quantify, you know, how, you know, whether we narrow that scope, the group narrows that scope, or how you deal with that kind of number of possibly eligible organizations that are out there, depending on the criteria or the recommendations that other recommendations that this group comes up with. Another suggested issue to consider is the scope of existing protections under international treaties and national laws for the Red Cross, IOC, and ITO names. The report does include the existing treaties and other positions that have been placed forth by the respective organizations. The report also notes that there are exceptions to these treaties and national laws. And so, you know, it's recommended that the group does take a look at this to see, does the extent of the current scope of protections, how does that come into to play in terms of determining any additional special protections that may be deemed appropriate by this group. Distinguishing between the Red Cross IOC from other international organizations. There are obviously some differences between IGOs and these two particular organizations or other similar international non-government organizations, but the report notes the submission by the IGOs that, indeed, you know, if you look at the criteria of the GAC, which basically is an organization for the protection of the Red Cross and IOC names, the two primary criteria are, one, that they are protected by international treaties, along with protection of domestic laws in multiple jurisdictions. The IGO, in their position, believes that they also could meet that criteria as well. So the group looking at, you know, what are the differences in determining any possible recommendations or criteria that could be established in determining protection for these types of organizations. The other final issue the report raises and discusses is establishing an objective set of criteria to determine which international organizations could qualify for any special protections. And there are several sets of criteria that are included in the final issue report. One, of course, is the GAC that was established for the Red Cross and IOC names. The other is the .INT criteria for registration of the .INT name for IGOs. There was the staff suggestions for criteria that were issued in the preliminary issue report that were subject to several public comments, before the final issue report was drafted and included those comments. The IGOs have proposed a different set of criteria. And then, of course, there are the criteria that were suggested by the board workshop paper that the board reviewed in its making its original adoption for protecting the IOC and Red Cross names at the top level for the first round. And all these criteria are set out in the final issue report. The issue report also provides a summary of the work to date up until late September, when the report was being drafted in its final stages, in terms of previous work. So for those of you who are interested in historical perspective, in terms of the work on the IOC Red Cross names, as well as previous work on IGO names. The report also briefly notes and summarizes the currently available or protections that were designed to be incorporated with new TLDs, so both at the top level and the second level. Top level, including, of course, the independent objector, the legal rights objection that IGOs could utilize, again, using the criteria for registration of a .INT name, and then the post-delegation dispute resolution procedures, or the PDTRP. At the second level, the report notes the Trademark Clearinghouse and the ERS, of course, those being subject to community discussion at this time. So that's a brief outline of what the report covers, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Brian. Are there any questions for Brian? Brian, I have a question for you.
Sure.
In the report, you are incorporating some legal analysis. Is that the same legal analysis that has been used by the board for its rationale that was previously redacted?
Yes, it does include. A couple things to clarify. One is there's no new legal analysis in this report. It only reports legal analysis that has already been provided. Either, as you mentioned, your particular example, it does include the unredacted legal analysis that was conducted prior to the board's resolution in Singapore by outside counsel, and that includes the language from the analysis or summary of that analysis from that position paper. And then, of course, it includes some of the legal arguments being put forth by the respective organizations in their positions on their, for example, treaty protection or protection by domestic laws in multiple jurisdictions. But the report itself does not include any new legal analysis. It just reports what has been submitted by various parties or, historically in this process.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Brian? Hearing none, I would like to move on to the sixth agenda item. So, Barry, if you could please bring up the latest version of the request for input document onto the screen. I have to admit that in the last 60 to 90 minutes prior to this call, there was so much information flooding into the mailing list that it was hard to keep track with that. But let me kick this off by asking you whether you have any comments on the latest version that was circulated on the list. I have David, please. David, you might be on mute.
I'm off mute now. Yes, I object to this new version. I support the version that was circulated earlier by Barry. The charter and the mission statement very clearly define INGOs, and this is an attempt to do an end run around that definition and expand it substantially, which I don't think is appropriate under our charter or our mission statement. Thanks.
Thank you. So you're objecting to the edits that have been made by Stefan?
I believe they were made by Greg.
By Greg.
I believe this was circulated within the past hour by Greg.
So, Barry, this is going to be a little bit of a challenge for you. So you maybe you can dig out the last but one version while I ask Greg to respond. Greg, please.
Well, yeah. First off, it's not intended to be an end run, and as I said in my comments, if we need to go back and talk about amending the charter, we can do so. But I think that, I have yet to hear an adequate explanation, other than it's in the charter, about why the specific language about treaty protection and multinational legal statutory protection, creates a an appropriate substantive distinction. And as I also said in my comments, there may be instances where there are laws in many countries, but there's no treaty, or vice versa. There, conceivably, and I'm no international law expert, or much less treaty law expert, but instances where treaties are adopted and become effective at the national level without national enabling legislation. So I think that those may be procedural distinctions. I'm not saying, by the way, that there that organizations that lack protection in more than one jurisdiction should somehow be shoehorned into this, where there are purely domestic organizations that have no protection outside of a single jurisdiction. I think, while it may be open for debate, that's not my point as to whether those should be included, but rather whether we've created kind of a distinction without a difference, or maybe a one-legged red-haired man with a limp kind of distinction that serves to perhaps bring certain organizations into the fold and leave others out without any real substantive difference in either the missions or underpinnings of those organizations or the ultimate kind of legal protections for them. I think to a great extent they are a vestigial holdover from the IOC RCRC definition, which at least arguably embraced those two organizations, while perhaps leaving out other equally worthy IGOs and INGOs. But I think without doing a survey of how IGO and INGO names are protected, it's a little difficult to know whether there are organizations that are being left out, but I get the sense that there may be those that are, and that, depending upon kind of treaty protection per se as being a necessary prong as opposed to other ways of establishing broad multinational or even not necessarily so broad multinational protection, it doesn't necessarily serve to us to get to the ultimate question of whether we are what sort of protections we should give to IGOs and INGOs that have international or an intergovernmental aspect to their name, to their organization, to their mission, to protection of their name. Thank you.
Greg, let me ask you a follow-up question that I'm reading from the chat. Jeff Newman has asked you whether you have some examples for that.
Well, I think, one example I can think of is an organization that is protected by statute in a number, or rather a federation of organizations that's protected by statute in a number of countries, is the Big Brothers, Big Sisters organization, which provides one-on-one mentor relationships for at-risk children. They're in a number of different countries, but I know that there are statutes that protect them in those countries, but there is, as far as I know, no treaty, unless it falls under some sort of broad, generic treaty for non-governmental organizations that would protect the Big Brothers, Big Sisters nomenclature.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. I have Chuck next.
I have just a suggestion, Thomas, on David's statement. Rather than just saying that none of the edits are okay, and maybe that's what we end up with, but there really aren't that many edits. There are a lot of comments, but there really aren't that many edits in the document. I think it'd be better to take this thing paragraph by paragraph and see whether there's anybody that objects to the edits, and I think we have do a much more comprehensive job of getting to the end goal of a document we can use.
That's very helpful, Chuck. Nonetheless, I wanted to give Greg and David the opportunity to explain what their positions are before we dive into that. Greg, is your hand still up or up again?
That's a vestigial hand.
Okay, I have David next, please.
Well, in response to Greg, if you look at the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see the GNSO resolution, which refers to international non-governmental organizations receiving protections under treaties and statutes under multiple jurisdictions, and specifically, and so on. Greg is free to make proposals to expand the charter, to go outside the charter, or start all over again. But I think we have to recognize that that's what this proposal is all about, and I object to that. And I think most of the people on the working group would understand that changing the charter, changing the task set forth by the GNSO resolution is not appropriate. I agree with Chuck that we would have to consider the edits one by one. Unfortunately, this latest proposal was put up so recently, I haven't had a chance to review all the other changes. This is the first one, the first text paragraph is the one that caught my attention.
Okay, I have Greg again.
Now, once again, I would still love to hear an explanation substantively of why this is a good demarcation. And as I said, if we need to reopen, if we need to propose a modification to the charter in order to remove or to edit that distinction, I will propose that. On the other hand, if there's a substantive explanation of why this is a good distinction and why IGOs and INGOs that don't meet that distinction should be left out of this process, would go a long way with me to resolving my concern. So far, I think it's a petty distinction, but one that could serve to, limit the organizations that would be affected by this, perhaps substantially. Thank you.
Okay, I have David and then Chuck, and after that we go through the document one by one.
Well, the answer to that question is the question ultimately of how many organizations are to be protected. There's been a consistent effort throughout the proceedings going back to Chuck Gomes' reserve names working group to decide how many names should be protected. If you accept Greg's proposal, this opens up to the protection a possible reserve name list of thousands and thousands of names. And I think almost everyone who's looked at this understands that that is not practical. That's why the GAC, for example, has proposed initially at least to protect only the names that are qualified for .int. Thanks.
Thanks, David. Chuck?
Just a quick practical suggestion. I think we should separate the issue of a possible charter change that Greg is suggesting from the completion of this survey. If it's changed and we need information later, we could always go out later asking for additional information. But I think it's time-sensitive and important for us to get a document out for the SOs and constituencies and SGs to respond to as quickly as possible. So I would suggest we finalize this. If Greg would like and there's support for changing the charter, we can deal with that separately.
That's very helpful. Yes. So I would like to ask you to take a look at the second paragraph of the document, the GNSO Council, and ask you whether you request any edits to that.
Thomas, could I just respond to what Chuck said there?
Please.
This is great. I appreciate the comment, and I think that perhaps rather than striking out the language that I struck out, another approach would be to ask for input from these organizations as to whether they believe that the distinction that would include only organizations that have receive protections under treaties and statutes under multiple jurisdictions is appropriate.
This is Chuck. David, would you be okay with that modification?
No.
Okay.
Just see a show of hands of those in the group. You can do that in the Adobe. Who is in support of leaving Greg's edit in? So David says no. This is not a formal vote, but just to
This is Robin. I'm not in the Adobe. Can I vote orally?
Yes, please do.
Okay, I support David.
Thank you. I'll give it a few more seconds. So from what I can see, Greg, there is not that much support for the edit. I guess the majority, I see two votes in favor, and the others would not like to see that edit to be in the document, and therefore I'd like to ask Barry to take it out of the document as it stands. Okay, so the next paragraph has no edits in there.
Thomas, this is Barry. Just real quick, just so that the working group understands what version we're at. The version you see before you is essentially version 4 that was sent out to the list several days ago. I can't remember when I sent it. The only difference between that version and what you see before you today is Claudia had submitted a couple of comments, but she didn't make any edits to the document itself. So that's essentially the only difference from version 4.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Let's go through the document and find the next edit, which is the first bullet point. Below are the elements, and then you have quantifying the entities whose names should be considered for special protections. For those who object to that edit, please speak up. You don't have to raise your hand in the Adobe.
This is Robin. I object to the edit.
Okay, then let's do the same thing as we did with the last edit. So I ask you to use the Adobe to give an indication of whether you want it to be in there or not.
Thomas, this is Chuck. Make sure your question is clear in terms of what we're agreeing or disagreeing to.
I have asked the participants of the call to indicate whether they would like this edit, whose names should to remain in the document, or whether the edit should go out of the document and the original version to be reinstated. So if you say no, then the edit is going to be taken out of the document.
Thanks.
Thomas, it's Alan. Could some of the lawyers on this call explain to those of us who aren't what the subtle difference is between the two? I mean, I understand the overall meaning, but I suspect there's something deeper that I'm not getting here.
Is there anybody volunteering to give that explanation?
David, I'll volunteer. It's the use of the word should.
Maybe those who are not familiar with U.S. law, you can elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, the use of the word should in this instance implies that there is some obligation to consider as opposed to simple statement that they may be considered. It's a very subtle distinction, I admit, but I agree with Robin that it's inappropriate for this document.
Okay, so with this additional information, is there anybody who wants to change his or her view or add?
Thomas, this is Chuck. What if we change the word should to might?
David?
Or may.
Or may, yeah, sure.
Okay, let's stick to may then. David, since you've given the explanation, would you have any legal concerns with may?
That I would not object to that.
Okay, so Greg is next.
That was my first comment, but also I think we were also talking about the difference between names and entities, and I think that there's a distinction, at least in terms of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, in that the protection stems in part from the Geneva Convention, which actually protects the string, you know, the Red Cross name or you know, string, independent of the existence of organizations that use it. That may be a distinction that applies only to the Red Cross situation, but I think that's why that edit was made by them. I don't think it's a really that important a distinction personally, but I mean we are in talking about names or strings, so it's whether you're talking about the entity or the string. I guess the idea is not to limit it to those strings that are only protected as, you know, kind of the property, if you will, of particular entities, especially, you know, because treaties may look at them differently.
So the alternative language that you would propose is?
I would just stick with whose names may. I think that's fine.
Okay. So I have Ellen next.
Yeah, when I raised the original question, I was really referring not to the should may, but to the addition of whose names. And I think Greg had just addressed that now, so I think I understand.
Okay, so Christopher is next.
I think Greg said what I wanted to say. It was just to, you're right, this is a specific, well, it was made by the Red Cross team, and our explanation is right there in the comment box. But this is because there is no organization called Red Cross alone. It's referring to the designation and not necessarily the name of an organization.
Thank you. Barry, would you be as kind as to do the edit live and change the wording to may? And then I would like to see a show of hands of those who object to that wording, whose names may be considered.
This is Barry. The real-time edits for this will be a little complicated. I am making those changes in the background.
Okay.
And every little bit I can re-PDF and show it back up.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. So I see no objections, so let's move to the next item, please, which is the next bullet point, evaluating the scope of existing protections under international treaties, laws for the organizations concerned. Any objections to that? Please give me a show of hands in the Adobe. Elizabeth, I'm not sure whether your hand or whether your vote is still on from the last point or whether that's new. Thank you. So there are no objections to that, I take. Next point is establishing qualification criteria for special protection of, and then IGO and INGO is deleted, names. It just says of organizations concerned. Any objection to that? Seeing none. If I'm too quick, you can jump in at a later stage, but I think we need to make some time here.
I'm sorry, Thomas, it's Barry. Just real quick, I did make a mistake in my statement earlier from Claudia's suggestions. She did state in the chat that she had updated some changes that were, instead of just organization, that they were international organizations. Just to qualify the word organizations, is there any concern from the working group for including those?
So if there are any objections, please let us know.
By the way, this is Chuck. One of the central purposes of the PDP work was that we focus on international, so that I think that's consistent with what the GNSO produced.
Okay, now I see a signal next to Claudia. Claudia, would you like to speak? No. Okay, so...
Hello?
Who's that?
Hello?
Claudia?
Yes, sorry. I'm having a little difficulty with the technical aspects of this. I just wanted to clarify. The edit had been from, in the first question, from entities to international organizations, just to make sure that we wouldn't from the start bias any sort of a response and keep the focus on international organizations, which I think we're trying to do here.
Okay, thank you. And I have not heard any objection to that. So this edit is going to be kept in the document by Barry. So, and then the last bullet point, distinguishing any substantive differences. Any objections to that edit? Hearing none.
This is Robin.
Hello, Robin. Please.
Yes, the part that concerns me is the part about including taking into account any distinctive grounds substantiating their protections. That seems to be a bit one-sided. So if we're going to take into account distinctive grounds substantiating their protections, it seems like we should also look at it from the other perspective as well, and also taking into account some analysis that doesn't substantiate protections.
Thanks, Robin.
So I would just say have none of it there, but if we have to have something, it seems to be more even-handed.
Since I have the aim, which hopefully all of you will share, that we take a 360-degree look at the issues, we would look at all the pros and cons. So let me suggest that we delete what's in the brackets and just ask whether there is any opposition to deleting what's in the bracket. Okay, then in the next paragraph we have levels. Level, I think that's a minor modification. And since there haven't been no objections for the last points, let me hear your views for the next four bullet points in total. So if you have any concerns with the edits in the next four bullet points, let me know. Give it another 10 seconds for you to run through it. Okay, so let's move on to the questions to consider. The first question has been modified to add in all GTLDs and then in brackets existing and new.
Hi, this is David.
David, please.
Sorry. The bullet point two under questions to consider, I object to striking out INGOs and replacing it with and other organizations. It's the same issue as on our first paragraph. The scope of this working group is IGOs and INGOs, as that term is defined.
Okay, so since that is consistent with the point that we had previously asked for a poll, unless I hear any opposition, we do this edit as requested by David. Okay, any objection to the edit in question one? Then there's another edit in question two. Any objection to that edit?
That's the one I was speaking of.
Yeah, this is Barry. I'm sorry to be difficult here. Am I supposed to remove the IGO, INGO? I wasn't clear on your statement, David. I'm sorry.
No, just to go back to IGO and IGOs and INGOs and take out the other edit and other organizations.
But that would apply to the first bullet point?
The second and third.
Also in the first bullet point in the section above, and then it's in the second question and in the third question.
Right.
So we're going to have that tweaked by...
This is Barry. I guess that's kind of a contradiction to including international organizations back at the top. So we're, if I understand this correctly, either we all agree that it's IGOs and INGOs and not international organizations, or the counter is that we include, when we make the statement that it's IGOs, INGOs, and other international organizations. And I believe, David, you just want IGOs and INGOs, but there is the opposite that wants other international organizations. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. I'm proposing that we stick with the GNSO resolution language, which is IGOs and INGOs receiving protection and so on. And then once that's defined, we can just refer throughout to IGOs and INGOs.
Okay, I think I understand.
And since we have dealt with that earlier on, I think in order to make the document consistent, Barry, you can change the points in the document below. I have Christopher next.
Yes, I think we propose the change to international organizations. The reason is, as stated in our first comment box, it's to incorporate our organizations as well, which are also part of the PDP. INGO and IGO would not necessarily incorporate the International Committee of the Red Cross and the Federation, which have different legal status. Whereas international organizations was seen as broader to incorporate all. I imagine we're supposed to be included in this as well. That's why we make the comment.
Okay. Ellen, please.
My recollection is the issue report specifically defined INGO as referring to the IOC and Red Cross movement and possibly others, but specifically includes them, regardless of whether it is semantically a good, an accurate description of it.
Okay, Christopher, is that good enough of an explanation for you?
If we're included, that's fine. We're just trying to make a legally correct point.
Great. David?
No, I agree with that.
Okay, so, Barry, we're going to change the language to the language of the GNSO resolution, IGOs and INGOs.
Got it. I'll make the action after we complete the other edit to make sure that's consistent throughout the document. Thank
Great.
You.
So if I'm not mistaken, that applies to questions until question 4. And then there is an additional question, which is question 5. Should appropriate special protections at the top and second level for the names and acronyms of, and then it should read, qualifying IGOs and INGOs be made? Any objection to that inclusion? Hearing none. Is that David? David, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I object to the edit. I think it should go back to qualifying IGOs and INGOs.
Yes, that's going to take place anyway. So we're going to make that edit through the document. The question is whether we object to question number 5 with the original language of IGOs and INGOs.
No, that's okay.
Okay, great. So question number 6, I think that's just a semantic change. Question 7, any objections to the edits in question 7? Hearing no objections. I have David. David, please.
I don't have any objections. I just have a question with respect to question 3 above. In particular, is there any reason why we are excluding from this question the issue of designations and acronyms and limiting it only to names?
Is there anybody wanting to answer that question? I think it goes without saying. Greg, please.
Rather than to answer the question, I would kind of just second the question, and I hope they're saying that the name of UNESCO, which is not in essence its name, for instance, just as a random example, would be considered a name for the purposes of this PDP, and it wouldn't have to be the United Nations Economic, Social, Cultural Organization, which is a mouthful, in order to be considered. I don't know if we need to clarify that somewhere here, that names include acronyms that serve the function of names or the like, but I hope this is not one of those instances where we're trying to draw an arbitrary line just to make sure a lot of people fall outside of it. Thanks.
Thanks,
I would just, this is David again, I would maybe add to that then that given that the scope of the group's work is to consider protection applicable for names, designations and acronyms, and that we're using this question three to elicit views on that point, that we also make express that the question relates to names, designations and acronyms, because otherwise we're limiting the expression of views under this question to solely the issue of names. And of course, names are going to be a pretty limited relevance in a domain name context. It's principally going to be about the acronyms for many of these organizations. So I would propose that amendment, that we include, in addition to names, designations and acronyms consistent with the introduction.
Names, designations and acronyms. Okay, I have Greg, you're next. Or is your hand still up?
It says that probably should be a global change, and maybe we can even have names with a capital N be a defined term that includes designations and acronyms, because I don't think there's any point in this effort we would exclude designations and acronyms, especially since, as was just stated, they more often serve, you know, the practical function of name as opposed to the, you know, kind of legal name that organizations may go by. Thank you.
Thanks. I have David next.
I agree with that.
Great. Ellen?
Yeah, I was going to suggest something similar because, the discussion we had much earlier where we added the terms whose names, we really meant, all of the above. So we really need to define something, whether it's names or some other word, to refer to the characteristics associated with, the organizations.
And then
use whatever term we define throughout the document.
So the proposal on the table is to have a definition of the term names and use names for names, designations, and acronyms, so that we have a consistent use of that throughout the document.
Ooh, musical interlude.
And the question is whether there is any objection to that overall change. And if so, please make yourself heard or show the block in the Adobe. David, is your hand still up or up again?
This is David. It's an excellent suggestion in my view. I just have a further suggestion, which is the term that could be considered for use in defining the names, designations, and acronyms of the organizations could be, for example, identifiers.
So we have an updated proposal now, which is the definition of the term identifiers, and the term identifier is defined as names, designations, and acronyms. Any objection to that?
I would say or in place of and.
That's a further edit, names, designations, or acronyms. And if there's no objection to that, I'll ask Barry to make that change in the document. So, unless there are any objections to the edits in question 7, we can now move to the previously deleted question 7, should appropriate special protections for names and acronyms of all other qualifying international organizations be made as well. I understand that since we have moved back to the original language, that this deletion should stay. So unless somebody speaks up asking to reinstate that language, we leave that out. And that means that we are through with the document. So any further questions or requests for edits for this document? Otherwise, Barry is going to make the edits and send it to the list. And can I have a show of hands? Or no, we'll just do the checks. please speak up if you object to this document. Otherwise, Barry is going to send it to the list, giving the group a little bit of time to look at it and submit remarks or objections, and in the absence of those, we will send out the document.
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue, please?
Sure. Please go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, I thought it would be helpful if we added to the questions to consider section just sort of a simple overarching question of does your group believe that the existing RPMs are sufficient or adequate to meet these needs? Because it seems like a lot of our questions in this section are really delving down into the details and take for granted that the group has found or the constituency stakeholder group does believe these things. So I think we need to have an overarching question in there as well that asks if the group's view is that the existing protections are adequate.
So you've heard the proposed question to be added to the questionnaire. Are there any objections to adding that question?
This is Greg. I object.
Greg, please.
I object. I think that, you know, we need, if we're going to do that, we need then kind of to list and enumerate the existing RPMs and also, you know, highlight the fact that those that are trademark-based may exclude international and INGOs whose names don't constitute trademarks under those. So I think if we're going to get, if we want to get down in the weeds on that, we should. But I think that a lot of people who don't educate themselves on this particular point probably don't realize that the UDRP at least, you know, excludes organizations whose protections don't come through trademark registrations per se, you know, such as, for instance, just again to go to back to it, UNESCO, whose name shows up on the Patent and Trademark Office register, but only because it's protected under the Paris Convention relating to IGO names and not because it's a trademark. So I think it's a trap for the unwary. Thank you.
Chuck?
Let David go, Thomas, because I think mine's not on Robin's suggestion.
David, please.
Thanks. Yes, I agree with Greg. I would object to the inclusion of the question. I don't think that we need to ask it in those terms without also going into all of the points which Greg has just enumerated. I also think that it, in a way, it also prejudges the process, because the fact that we're having this PDP in the first place, I think, leaves open that question of adequacy. And if we would put a question in this way and in this fashion, it may lead people, in a way, to prejudge the results of these deliberations. So for those reasons, I would also be in favour of not including that additional question.
Thank you, David. I have Kira next.
Hi, this is Kieran. We would also object to the inclusion of that language. We agree with both David and Greg's objections, and would also like to add that in this context, in going out for stakeholder group input, there's been an enormous amount of work done from each organization in demonstrating how the RPMs are inadequate to deal with the issues that we face, and it would require an enormous amount of re-presentation, re-education of these groups in order for them to address that question in an informed way. So we would object to the inclusion of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kieran. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I find some of these comments curious. We're asking for input on a rather complex subject, and we're asking some specifically very complex questions, but we seem to be afraid to ask the general question. And if indeed we need to talk about the kind of things that Karen just mentioned, of what protections are valid and not valid for the groups we're looking at, maybe that's something we need to put in a preamble. But I don't see any reason to not ask a general question for fear that people don't understand, when we're then going and asking far more detailed ones, which if they don't understand the general one, they're really not going to understand these. So we seem to have a split personality in terms of how much we trust the people who are asking the questions to.
Alan, sorry, this is Kieran. Maybe I can just clarify by stating that we don't necessarily object to this group going over the information that we've already presented and understanding that, we just think that that should be limited to the people that are dedicated on the working group to fully exploring this issue, rather than it being a general question going out to a general and not as invested and educated group on the issue.
I think that goes against the ICANN process of asking, soliciting input from the whole community and not just the people on a working group. But okay.
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue?
Yes. I have Greg first, and then it's your turn, Robin.
I was just going to say that I think, you know, to the extent that I think question five kind of teases out, you know, largely the same issue of whether, you know, additional protections are needed or appropriate. So I don't think we need to ask the question twice, in a sense.
Robin, please.
Yes, I'm concerned that you know, the responses that of well, you know, people, if they say there are inadequate protections, it's because they don't understand and they need to be educated, and I think that this group needs to leave some possibility open for constituencies who have heard these arguments and find them unpersuasive, frankly. So I think that question is relevant, and I think, you know, we can't take for granted that it, the right conclusion, the informed conclusion, is that these protections are necessary. I think we need to give some space for those who have looked at it and still nonetheless feel the protections are adequate.
Thank you, Robin. Chuck, is your hand still up for a new point, or have you gotten in the queue to respond to this?
Well, no, I haven't. But let me just say that it's a simple point. Whatever we end up with here, I suggest you give a timeline, a deadline for people to respond so that it doesn't drag on and we can get this thing out. I would suggest by the end of the week if nobody objects to that.
Sure, but I think we have one objection on the table now, and if we can resolve this in the next 2 or 3 minutes, I would be all for it. Robin, maybe as a compromise, we heard that your question might be included in question five. So would the group object to adding some words to question five so that it reads, should appropriate special protections at the top and second level for the names and acronyms, or that the identifiers of IGOs and INGOs be made, and then in brackets, i.e. existing or new or modified RPMs, comma, if any. Because my understanding is that you wanted to put the idea into the reader's head. I have Greg.
I just wanted to say that I don't think the way that's formulated, you know, works. Probably doesn't work necessarily for Robin either, but I will let her speak for herself. But I think it's not an IE. It may be an EG. But I think, you know, what's before your, you know, potentially before us as appropriate special protections are not limited to new or existing or enhanced RPMs, but to, you know, other methodologies as well. So I don't think the question, you know, should be limited by an IE.
Would you be happy with an EG then?
I think an EG would work.
Thanks. This is Barry. I published a starter draft in the chat labeled number 8.
Okay, let's hear David first. David Maher, that
well,
is.
Yeah, I think that question 8 is worth asking. I think it would be well understood by the existing stakeholder groups, constituencies, and so on, that it doesn't need further explanation. And I don't think that IE or EG works. I believe Barry's proposal, although we don't need to say adequate enough, I think just adequate to offer protection would be the preferred wording.
Okay, so the proposal on the table is to include question 8. I have David next.
Thanks. With respect either to the proposed inclusion of the EG or David's subsequent comment, I think we would need to have some language in there which indicated adequacy or otherwise of existing RPMs, which would also mirror the if any language that we are now envisaging proposing for any new special protection. Thanks.
Greg?
I was just going to say that I think if we are going to include this, I think we need to include in the question or somewhere in this document, a specific understanding that many IGOs and INGOs do not qualify either for UDRP or for, I believe, the Trademark Clearinghouse as well, although I'd have to double-check that. So I think if we're going to talk about the existing RPMs, we need to talk about the existing RPMs that are available to IGOs and INGOs, not the existing RPMs per se. I just think that whatever the question is asked, we have to be really clear about that point, that one of the issues, and frankly, underlying all of this is the issue that not all of the RPMs that exist for brand owners exist for IGOs and INGOs, and that we need, I think that needs to be, part of the essential understanding as people look at this question. Thank you.
David. David, are you on mute?
Yeah. I wouldn't object to a rewording along the lines that Greg suggested. To make it just to make it more clear, I think most of the people who will answer this, the groups that will answer this document, are well aware of what Greg has said. But saying it clearly is fine by me.
Thank you, David. I propose that Barry puts language into the draft to be circulated to the group, unless I hear opposition to that inclusion at all. But if you are willing to consider this additional question, then we should put it in there. David, is your hand up again?
Yeah, I like that latest version that Barry put up.
Ellen.
Yeah, thank you. My only problem with the version Barry put up is the word accommodate right at the end. What we're really saying is it may not be applicable for them, may not accommodate them. I think the word is a little bit vague.
Okay, so with the modification, may not be applicable.
Or they may not be eligible for, or some words like that. If you invert the sentence with the understanding that some IGOs and NGOs may not be eligible for the UDRP and trademark clearinghouse.
Yeah, it's up in the chat now.
That makes it clear, I think. Yeah, that's good.
Unless I hear opposition to that now, we put that into the document, and I would consider that document to be, unobjected by this group. So we put it out for comment on the mailing list with a couple of days response time for you. Thank you for that. Ellen, is your hand up again or still?
No, sorry. That's a vestigial hand, as someone said.
Great. Now, let's go to item number 7, which is to continue the exploration of issues defined in the Charter. And to review the proposed work effort strawman. Now, first of all, let me thank you for all your contributions. I think that those have been most helpful. However, I doubt that the whole group did have the time to fully digest everything that has been submitted, particularly the documents that have been submitted very, very shortly before this call. What I found very encouraging is that the discussion that took place on the mailing list has pretty much focused or tried to focus on objective criteria. So before we go into the strawman document and try to refine that, I'd like to ask you whether you agree to some principles that we might apply in looking at criteria. I have now put something into the chat, so to me, at least that's my understanding reading the discussion that took place on the mailing list, we might want to check the criteria brought up by the various parties and check them against these questions. You know, so to me the question is, what should criteria look like? I think they should be objective. That's what a lot of you wrote on the list. They should be globally applicable. They should be easily and unambiguously verified, so that it should be something where no subjectivity or no big efforts need to be made to verify whether a criterion is present or not. And they should address what is special for the potential beneficiaries. And what I mean by that, and that's the only point that I bothered to explain, that we're looking for factors that apply to factors that apply to all rights holders do not help a lot in trying to make a distinction, you know, whatever that distinction ultimately might be. So is that something that you could live with as a test for the criteria that we're discussing? Because then I would try to come up, or, you know, go through the documents that you submitted and try to amalgamate that into a document where we can discuss the pros and cons. Can I hear any views on that? David, please.
Well, I'm not entirely sure why we would be talking about criteria at this point. I still believe that there's a lot of work to be done before we get to criteria. The questions that are being asked in the other document, which was up until a couple of seconds ago, I believe are the first ones that it's the first work project that we need to cover. And talking about criteria is premature at this point.
But I guess, David, my point is that even making a distinction whether we want to move on discussing protections or not, we need some factors, criteria, features, whatever you might call them, to base our decision on. But I open the floor to Ellen.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable coming up with these global descriptions because I almost feel that they're going to exclude what might be viable outcomes. And, you know, I can see having criteria which are not unambiguous, but one comes up with a methodology for determining the outcome. You know, so I think the world may not be as simple as we're hoping it is, and we cannot necessarily provide numeric metrics for everything. So I would not want to exclude innovative answers to the thorny problems we're looking at, because I think that's the only way we're going to get through this and reach something resembling at least a partial consensus. The views are so diverse that I think we're going to need flexibility, and I wouldn't want to rule out possible solutions because they may be difficult in some cases to implement. I think some of them may be difficult to implement.
Okay, don't get me wrong. This is just a starting point, so it's not an exhaustive list. But I think that, you know, some factors are more suited to help the group make a determination than others. To give you an example, if we're talking about costs, you know, that has been mentioned, costs to organizations. Costs are there for everyone that might be affected by an infringing registration, right? So that is not something that is unique for this scenario or justifying a special treatment. While if you look at the source of where the money is coming from, we read that it's donors' money or taxpayers' money, and that might be a factor that is special to the organizations in question rather than other rights holders.
Yeah.
You know, not trying to say that this should be the outcome, but just to give you an idea as to what factors we should be looking at more than at others, or weighing different than others.
And Thomas, let me restate what I said another way. I think these are fine guidelines and issues to consider when looking at criteria. They shouldn't be the criteria for the criteria, though.
Yes, and I agree. It should be open, a non-exhaustive list of factors. Claudia, please.
Hi, Thomas. I would have to say that I very much agree that that we do need to be looking at criteria, that they do need to be objective and globally applicable. And on that point, I think a fundamental point that we need to address and to clarify is this question that I've had in the chat a bit with Greg already, and that is the question of whether the "and" in the GNSO resolution that we're talking about INGOs receiving protections under treaties and statutes under multiple jurisdictions is an "and" that is a conjunctive "and". Because if we're talking about INGOs that are receiving protections under treaties and they must receive both, then we're really, really limiting the discussions quite a bit. We might as well just say IGOs plus, you know, perhaps the Red Cross and the IOC, and then that's it. And so I think that it's a fundamental question for us to address this definition of and perhaps what we need to do is to look at it as an "and" that says both, and that way we can look at a reasonable basis for our definitions of INGOs and IGOs.
Thank you, Claudia. That's a point that we bear in mind when continuing our discussion. Chuck, please.
Sure, and Alan hit at this a little bit, I think, in his last comment, but the four criteria that Thomas listed, I think, are criteria for the ultimate criteria that we will develop. And I think if we look at them that way, sorry for the poor wording, but they're not our ultimate criteria. So I agree with David that we're not there yet to look at the ultimate criteria for qualification if we go that route. But they are, to me, very good principles that we will use to measure whether or not the ultimate criteria we develop fit. So it, I'm having trouble with terminology, but I have no problem with those four factors. Maybe that's what these are, factors that will apply to the ultimate list of criteria that we develop if we do that.
Maybe if I can respond to that, Chuck, the idea when coming up with these questions was to help us structure the vast amount of documents and ideas that have been floating, both in our last discussion as well as in the documents. So in order to be able to structure our discussion better, I thought it might be worthwhile helping the group determining what factors or what facts actually they are looking for as a basis for their decision. I have David next.
Yeah, I have a specific objection on the document that we're looking at. It says draft objective criteria for inclusion of international organizations for protection, paren reserved list, close paren. That assumes that the special protection is a reserved list, and I don't agree with that at all. The question of putting anything on a reserved list is a specific and very controversial issue for this group. If we do decide to pursue this list of criteria, I think it should say for special protection and strike the words reserved list.
David, for your information, this has been a copy and paste from a document or from a comment from Claudia. and it hasn't been edited by Barry. So I understand that you have made the point on the list that, and you were in agreement with some other participants of the group that there shouldn't be, or that reserved names list shouldn't be the solution, so your point is well taken. Greg. Greg, please.
I was just going to, follow up on what Claudia said and, say that's, really the root of my concern is that in taking oddly restrictive criteria, we are, eliminating what could be a very large portion of the INGO world. Unless that's the stated intention of this group, I think we need to consider either how we're going to read that and or change the charter, because I don't think the intention is to just, cut down the number of organizations we're considering arbitrarily. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. I heard another voice. Is there somebody that wants to speak up? No, so maybe just the microphone was not on mute. Now, Barry has put up on the Adobe the updated strawman. Although I have to say I don't like the word too much as it's used in different places than I can at the moment. So it shouldn't be confused with the strawman solution for the trademark clearinghouse, obviously. Are there any comments to this latest version? And while you think of comments or questions, let me remind you that this set of questions or work packages, I should rather call them, I had originally drafted in order to facilitate our work. And what has gone more or less unnoticed is that, there's a section at the beginning that has now been deleted where I have tried at least to make very clear to the group that if we work on B or C or D, that doesn't mean that that there will be protections. But I thought that it might be worthwhile highlighting some areas that need our attention and that we could work on those in parallel for the sake of saving time. And should we come to the conclusion that no protection should be granted at all, that is okay. That is a potential outcome of the work of this working group. But to me, at least, in order to make an informed decision, I can't say now whether I would want to grant special protections or not, because to me it is a package. And that means that we need to talk about criteria, we need to talk about the eligibility, about the process to be added to the list. We would also need to talk about the potential tools for protection. May it be the proposal to inflate or add to the existing reserved names list? May it be tweaking existing or proposed RPMs, or maybe may it be to invent new RPMs or other tools to achieve that aim? And I think that once we have worked on all those sections, then we have a package to which we can say yes or no. And I would like to hear your view on the latest version of this. I don't see any hands at the moment. I would be surprised if everybody were happy with this. Alan, please.
Two comments. First of all, on the struck out sentence that's just before section number two, I know it's struck out right now, but I'm going to remind the group that consensus is not the opposite of no consensus, according to the definitions that are attached to our chapter, to our charter, rather. There are different levels of consensus. The least one is no consensus. The top ones have the word consensus in it, but there's other ones. There's another one in the middle. So just recall that consensus is not the opposite of no consensus, because it, saying we're going to reach consensus on something, we probably won't. But that doesn't mean a large number of the people don't agree. So, and I understand the sentence is gone now. My specific comment is on at the beginning that I really would like to see in the first sub-sub-bullet of A1, IGOs and INGOs separated. We have seen, in answer to the particular question, the predecessor of this group has seen immense amounts of information about the harms suffered by two specific INGOs. I don't believe anyone has seen anything related to IGOs or perhaps other INGOs that meet the criteria, and I think it's really important that we understand what the problem is that we're trying to fix before we look at solutions.
And, okay, unless
and,
I hear...
I don't want to group them together because that may mask the problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Unless I hear any objection from you, I would like to ask Barry to separate the two. Chuck, please.
Sure, Thomas. Thanks. My suggestion is that we go with Thomas's plan here as modified based on input he's received. I think we could easily spend a couple months trying to refine a process going forward, and we don't have time to do that. And I believe this process will, it may not be perfect, but let's go with it, and let's not try and fine-tune it too much. We'll be able to fine-tune as we go, and let's get moving on our work.
Thanks so much, Chuck. And unless there is opposition to that, I would really like to like the group to start working on the various items in parallel. So in an ideal world, we would have somebody, a volunteer, multiple volunteers in this group to take care and coordinate input and write up a draft. You know, it can be bullet points only for each of those sections that we can then present to the group. Is there, and to be quite honest, I would like to collect both the pros and the cons. So, you know, everything that can help the group make an informed decision is most welcome here. Are there any volunteers to take care of one of those areas?
Thomas, this is Barry. If I may make a recommendation. After this call, why don't we get together and we'll clean up what I'm now calling a work package and no longer a straw man, and we'll also make an appendix to that we can create kind of a volunteer segment so that people can sign up for the various sections per your request and just kind of clean this up, and we'll send it out to the list and have people volunteer on the list.
Okay, that's fine by me, unless we... get a sufficient number of volunteers now, but I'm not going to push much further on this. So the idea, just to give you an example, there has been discussion on the mailing list where some of the participants have said that they think they could agree on, for example, the fact that just amending or adding to the reserve names list would not be a good idea, because that would prevent the organizations themselves from utilizing and registering certain designations. So we might think of, you know, at least putting in there that, you know, adding to or amending a reserved names list, you know, pro might be that it's an easy solution and that the technical infrastructure for that is already in place. But the negative side to it, or the collateral damage to that, would be that even the organizations in question can't use it, and that there is no exemption process. And then one could think of another tool with an exemption process and define the pros and cons for that, you know, or go through existing RPMs, say why they are not open to certain organizations, which could be a weakness, and propose ways in which they could be tweaked so that these organizations can be protected or use those RPMs. So I hope that idea is more or less understood. What I'm trying to do with this vast task is actually to break it down into various sections, have volunteers work on that in parallel and then discuss the outcome or the preliminary outcome on the mailing list and in the calls. Is that something that you could live with? Hearing no objection. Chuck, please.
It's not an objection. I just want to make sure we're all clear on what you're asking for volunteers on. Now, I think in the case of the registries and the NTAG, where we have multiple people involved and other groups are the same, it'll be helpful for us to put our heads together on that before we respond and volunteer and so forth. But could you clarify, Thomas, what specifically you're asking volunteers to do, to pick from in terms of topics or whatever you're getting at there?
The idea is that we have maybe one caretaker, if you wish. I'm not sure whether that's a good word in English, for each of the headings that sort of maybe comes up with a proposal as to what can go under these points and collect input from others volunteering to contribute. So basically, it's, I think it would be too much of a task for me to discuss with everybody, but if we could have small groups with a volunteer each that collects and amalgamates the contributions into a draft document, that would be very helpful. Did that answer your question, Chuck?
Not totally. So, for example, on the screen right now in Adobe is qualification criteria and eligibility check as two major categories, and then there are subcategories underneath that. So is that, are those the categories that you're wanting input on? Or I don't seem to have ability to move the screen right now, so I can't scroll it. Ah, there it is. It disappeared on me. Okay, and then, of course, you've got protections and admission to protections. Are those four major categories the ones that you're talking about?
I had thought of splitting it into these A, B, C, D, whatever it is, sections. And, you know, that doesn't mean that that a volunteer has to write up everything, but that volunteer would sort of send to the list the request for people to provide input to that person and maybe take a discussion surrounding those off-list and come back with a provisional answer or a proposal that people can look at, so that we split the work into chewable bits.
So could you define the A, B, C, D that you're talking about?
A would be qualification criteria and the subheadings, but certainly we can have...
Okay, so I'm looking at the right ones. Okay, you don't need to go any further for me. I was just making sure I was clear. Okay.
If
so
that's too big,
eligibility check, et cetera.
Because I think those are interlinked. And talking about qualification criteria, maybe that volunteer wants to come up with another matrix to approach. That's fine by me. I just wanted to sketch out a potential way forward.
Thank you.
Ellen.
Yeah, Thomas, part of the problem is you have two A's on the screen right now. You have A12, then A12, and then B1. So that's causing at least some of the confusion when you talk about ABC.
Which is true. The A was added after last week's call, but no adjustment have been made in the...
Yeah, I just wasn't sure which A you were talking about because there are two A's on the screen at the moment. I would be glad to take responsibility for the one named B, the eligibility check, because the answer is yes. That's my report.
Because there are several options in there.
Well, yes, it is, but which we pick is going to depend on what the criteria are. There are some criteria which ICANN is going to be just fine to check. There are some criteria which will be on a list. There are some criteria which will be esoteric enough and require legal decisions that we will have to outsource it. So,
but that's the matrix.
I don't think we can answer those questions without knowing which criteria we're talking about. So,
okay, I'll talk to you more about that. But we have a volunteer now, Ellen. That's
only if the answer is yes.
So that was not unconditional, which is too bad. Greg, you have lowered your hand, or did you still want to speak up?
My hand is down at the moment.
Okay. So so it was up and then down again. Okay, I think we can't really make progress on that rather than, you know, having a more or less agreed methodology now and having agreed or at least no objection to working in parallel on the various subsections. I would propose that we, you know, we have in number 8 in the agenda, the review of the IGO work plan. I think this can be better reviewed once we have spoken to the potential volunteers and the delivery of their provisional reports or draft input. In terms of next steps, as Barry said, we're going to send updated versions of the documents to the list. Hopefully we're going to have the input request document or the request for input document finalized by the end of the week, so that that can be sent out early next week. And we will also send out a request for or an encouragement to potential volunteers to work with us on this, and I will be discussing with each of them so that we can make sure that we're all on the same page. And I hope to have a little bit more elaborated Strawman document and maybe first input on the various sections that we can discuss next week and take it from there. Are there any final remarks that you would like to make? Which leaves me with apologizing again for having changed the time at such short notice. Barry, the next meeting is going to be held at the usual time. Am I correct?
Yes, next Wednesday, the 12th at 1900 UTC.
That is great. Chuck, please.
Yeah, is there any chance of trying to find a time that's different? Because that every other week, that will conflict with a longstanding registry stakeholder group meeting.
When does your stakeholder group meeting end?
Chuck, I think you've got it wrong. The stakeholder group meeting starts 3 hours earlier, 4 hours earlier than this meeting.
Oh, okay. That's my mistake. Okay.
You were talking about that one time when we changed it last week.
Oh, okay. That's my mistake. Thanks, David.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. So we're going to meet at, 19 hours UTC next Wednesday, and we will hopefully have general counsel input by then and also some more input by the group. Thanks again. Thanks to staff for helping me prepare this and certainly also helping me review the last meeting, and they will help me review this one too so that we can make progress as quickly as we can. And thanks to all of you for the vivid discussion on the mailing list and the valuable input, and I'm looking forward to working with you again next Wednesday. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks.